Welcome to Season 2 of the Sales Compensation Show, where we share the latest sales performance research, insights, and solutions through in-depth discussions with industry experts. Our goal for Season 2 is to enable our listeners to make smarter decisions based on real-world data and behavioral psychology. Join us for more holistic conversations and discussion about sales compensation and Salesforce effectiveness that will improve the lives and careers of both current and future sales comp leaders. I'm your host, Nabil Alazam.
Hi, everyone. Today, we're thrilled to have Dal Sidhu, the head of global sales compensation for Zoom, where he is responsible for the sales compensation experience of over 2,100 sales and service participants, owning the entire process from design to administration on the show. Over 20 years of experience in sales and business operations throughout the high-tech industry means that Dal is now a very trusted advisor and a thought leader in the space, and exactly the kind of individual you want to be talking to. So with my great pleasure, love to welcome Dal to the show. Thank you for being on.
How are you doing?
I'm doing great. I know you and I have had this discussion a few times in the past, and I've shared this, but I think for the audience's sake and kind of the way I kick off every one of our episodes, sales comp is not a world that you start off as a 10-year-old being like, oh yeah, I'm going to get into the world of sales comp. It's one of those things where I think, you know, for me, it's been a very fulfilling career, but I'd love to share your story of how you got into this space with the audience.
I mean, it's definitely one of those stories where sales compensation picked me and I didn't pick the sales compensation. I started in the year 2000 with a company called Seagate Software. Back then, you might have heard Crystal Reports. That was sort of our primary product. I was hired by one of my old managers, and he had hired me at different companies, and this was his latest company and wanted me to come in and work in this area. And he was running sales operations at the time. And I was just kind of really learning about compensation and what it really means in a B2B scenario with variable compensation in a quota. And then, you know, over time, you know, Seagate changed their name to Crystal Decisions. Crystal Decisions got bought by Business Objects. Business Objects got bought by SAP. And I sort of stayed in compensation for a number of years at that time, for about 7 years. And over time, I progressed from being just a normal analyst to being a manager. And then at one point, I was like, you know, I've done this for a long time. It was 7, 8 years, or I was reporting to the same manager for that time, which was great, by the way. You know, there was nothing wrong with it. It was just like, I want to learn more. And therefore, from there, I moved into sales operations. From sales operations, I moved into partner operations. For partner operation, I moved to solution operations. And then from solution operations, I moved into a go-to-market strategy role for one of our business units at SAP, which went from roughly, I think it was around 300 million to over a billion in about 5 years. And I was part of that journey, like kind of building out the strategy, the organization, working with some of the key leadership there around, you know, how do we kind of continue to grow this business? Because we were growing quite fast. And we're like, we know that at some point you're going to plateau and kind of how do we kind of make sure that we continue to move forward? And in that role, I was doing a lot of different things. You know, I was looking at customer profiles. We were kind of building different teams. You know, we were doing stuff like Internet of Things, big data. We were actually proposing different compensation structures, even though I wasn't responsible for compensation. That was an individual contributor role. And then one of my managers there said that, hey, you know, for you to progress, you need to kind of move into a manager position. And they said, well, you know, the corporate group is looking for somebody that has experience in sales compensation. Like, why don't you do that? And, you know, you'll have a team and everything else. And I'm just like, I don't want to go back into compensation. But when I started having that conversation with the leadership there, it was very different than what I was doing back when I was doing it with Business Objects. And I thought, okay, well, this sounds pretty interesting. So jumped into that and spent another 6 years doing that role. And then I'm like, okay, this is, you know, I kind of like it. And then an opportunity popped up with Zoom and decide and move to Zoom.
Sales comp is interesting in the sense of you end up getting picked, or I've heard this theme multiple times where it's your skill sets kind of land you in this position where the business needs support there. Once you start doing it, especially you do it at a scale where you get a variety of different channels and go to markets that you're executing sales comp for, it's very analytical, challenging, problem to solve, and you get to work with all these different stakeholders. I mean, that's the thing that I found very interesting when I started my career in the space as well. But it's interesting because you joined Zoom at a time where Zoom has seen obviously an insane growth. I remember taking our company from a in-person 100% in Toronto company to overnight being a remote business. And I honestly don't know how we would have done it had we not actively using Zoom and very familiar with it and overnight right. Just taking off. So I imagine that must have been a very exciting journey as well to jump in and kind of bring your experience to a whole new set of challenges and issues to solve from a sales comp space.
Most definitely. Like when I was through my journey with SAP, you know, we're moving from an on-premise organization to a cloud organization. And the compensation and the strategies are very, very different. And I've noticed that within the SaaS world, they're constantly changing. There's something that you always need to think differently from one period to the next. And when I moved into, when I came to Zoom, it was still in the COVID times, but we're just coming off of that as well. And we're seeing a lot more customers going back to work on downsizing their subscriptions with us. And it was all about retention. And that was a big shift. It's like, oh, well, yeah, people are going back to work now. We had this massive boom, but now we have to retain those customers and still grow at the same time. Because, you know, we're a public company and the expectation is always grow. I came in this perfect storm where it's like, we had this phenomenal growth. I was part of that for a bit. And then we had this plateau. And now we're into a totally different phase of what we're calling a Zoom 2.0. We've expanded our portfolio. Now we're into, you know, we're into different markets, different competitors, and, you know, different challenges. But the big thing is, you know, customer retention.
The point on change, I mean, I think every next evolution of software or business go to market increases the speed that we need to execute and pivot and change. And I know you and I have talked about this, you know, quite a bit. And even the SaaS world that we're seeing across all of our customers, and I know you've been on some of the sessions we've had in the Forma community, and consumption-based pricing is a perfect example of this kind of next iteration and change that we're seeing in the world of sales comp. And I think it's interesting because you've gone through that transition of on-prem to SaaS, and it shifts the whole revenue collection mechanism, which then means it shifts comp. And so I'm curious, you know, before we dive in perhaps into consumption-based pricing and getting your take on that, because I think it would be a pretty interesting conversation, what were the biggest lessons that you saw from that shift to on-prem to SaaS and comp? And, you know, are there things that you think might apply to this kind of next iteration and shift that we're seeing in the SaaS market?
It's an interesting question. I'm trying to think back. The whole dynamic of how you recognize revenue and how you pay on that revenue stream was very different in the SaaS world. On-premise, you have a transaction and then you just have the maintenance stream. You don't pay the sales guys on the maintenance stream. That's done by the renewal team. And, you know, you do that one transaction and move on to another one. And sometimes you kind of go back and do a little bit of an upselling with, you know, your product changes. In the SaaS world, the difference there was that you have different subscription models. You can have somebody that wants to pay on a monthly. You can have somebody that wants to pay on an annual. You've got a ton of different revenue recognition rules that have now changed versus the on-premise world. And those also had to be taken into consideration when you're kind of building your comp plan, because you're not just looking at the components and the pay curves and everything else, but you're also looking at all the different crediting rules that has to go along with it. And what's going to be the right motivators? And how do you make sure that the sales reps are not just recycling the revenue? In the SaaS world, becomes really easy to say, well, that's not a renewal, it's actually a new deal because I sold them this new product and da-da-da-da-da. But theoretically, they might have like downsold something 6 months ago, and all you're doing is like, you're just bringing them back to the same level that they were 6 months ago. And theoretically, you're just recycling it. And then that to me was a big challenge in the SaaS world. Like, how do you put in the right mechanisms to manage that shift? Where now sales reps have gotten really, really smart around this. It's like, hey, wait a minute. If I do it this way, I can get paid on this revenue twice. You didn't have that in the on-premise world. I wouldn't call it gaming. It's more of setting the right parameters and the right conditions to be able to share with the sales organization that says, this is the right thing to do, this is the wrong thing to do. And now you're always going to have some people that are always going to try to game it. But I think for the most part, like, sales reps are always trying to do the right thing. They're trying to do the right thing for the customer. They're trying to do the right thing for the company. So like, they're trying to work the best within their rules and obviously take advantage of those rules. The other major thing that I saw from the on-premise to the cloud was really the focus around customer. Around on-premise, you know, you kind of sell the software, you usually have a system integrator that does the implementation, but in the SaaS world, it's so easy to switch from one vendor to another. And if you don't have that customer link, the hook, the stickiness of your product, it makes it much more easier for them to move on to something else. And that was the other thing is like, okay, how do we make sure that we've got the right tip of the spear in terms of what you're selling to the customer and make sure that creates that hook where it's hard for them to go to another vendor. Then the whole customer experience that you want to put in front of them, from your AE to your customer service rep, to your renewal rep, to your services rep, the amount of people that you have to have on that account starts to grow quite a bit. And your cost of sale gets much more bigger. Your cost of acquisition of that customer gets much more bigger than it did in the on-premise world. So that was a big change. Like, how do we equate these two? Because here it used to cost me this, now it's costing me this, but this is more value from a long-term perspective because I'm getting that continuous revenue stream that just continues to kind of build up like a snowball.
the customer experience has gotten more and more customized in a sense. And as a result, we've found niches of roles to fill in specific behaviors. From acquisition, you might have multiple roles that touch that customer, whether it's a sales engineer that truly knows the product, the actual account executive, the upfront business developer. And then ongoing, you have different things. But again, with SaaS, you touched on this, is like you land and then you create all these additional products. And how do you educate the customer and if they're using the product the right way to make sure you're defending the value that you're creating for this organization? And I think, you know, to me, what's interesting is as you bring on more sales roles and sales behaviors, incentives, the design side of it is an optimization game where you're constantly tweaking different levers, pulling some up, pulling some down to tweak behavior. And now you're not just doing that for one sales motion, you're doing that for 10 different motions that need to cohesively work together to produce the best customer outcome. And the world of sales comp is only getting more complex, I imagine, because of that.
Very more complex. When I think back to my days on-premise to now, it's much more satisfying because you get in this market change and market shift and you're constantly thinking about new ideas, how to drive the right behaviors. And now you've got, like you mentioned, different roles, right? You've got the CSM, you've got the pre-sales, you've got the AEs, and how do they work together? Like, how do they differentiate between them as well? Because you don't want to all pay them the same dollar. So that dynamic has gotten so much more complicated, but at the same time, that's what creates the excitement in this and being in compensation right now.
So stepping back, I think the design element has gotten more complicated. I imagine, and I think that's for all the reasons that we discussed. On the administration side, do you feel that it's also more complicated than on-prem? Like, has that world also shifted as well?
Absolutely. One of the challenges around the whole compensation administration side is a lot more companies have gone towards a SaaS model as well in comp administration. While it provides you the flexibility of, okay, we can make some of those changes, that also creates more complexity because now you're able to be more flexible with your sales organization. So you can go from like having 10 plans to having like 50 plans with different variations within that plan, because now you're trying to manage the different components of that plan for different type of roles as well. So each role now almost wants to be unique and customized. And even though you have the tool to do it, you almost have to set the business parameters to say, we're not going to go to that length, because we need to be able to maintain these plans that we have from an administration standpoint. And they're getting more complicated versus simple. And therefore, you have to put the business conditions in, which when you start putting those business conditions in, the business starts to say, hey, you guys are putting us in a box, right? And it's like, well, we have to, because it's getting too unwieldy for us to manage these plans. So from an administration standpoint, it's gotten, I wouldn't say it's simpler, but the tools have gotten better, where you're now thinking more around how do we automate some of the manual stuff we used to do and be more productive overall. But then you've got the scope of plans that you have. I mean, your scope of plans is starting to get a lot bigger as well because you have the complexity of all these different roles.
I mean, it's interesting because like for me, you think about the amount of money that's spent on variable comp. And I mean, across the Fortune 500, the average 9-10% of revenue being spent on variable comp. And then you factor in, it's typically the second largest cost center for most organizations. And you think about the level of rigor that's put in to the design of incentives, given the amount of spend. And I think this is kind of where, to me, I've always found that sales comp historically, and it's starting to get more and more attention now, but historically has been underfunded, given the amount of the lever and the amount of impact it can have on the business. And so I'm curious from your perspective, as you think about kind of the best practices and kind of insights to share on how you've taken this kind of design process and optimized it to, again, get the maximum outcome for the business. Any learnings or any takeaways that you'd want to share?
Even the complex world, right? And all the different roles and everything else going on, always have to look at how do we keep it simple? Because at the end of the day, your users being your sales rep, your customers, your internal customers, which are your sales reps, they want something to be able to understand very quickly what they're going to get paid on. And the more simple you can make it, the more productive they're going to be because they're not spending hours on end trying to reconcile their compensation. So whatever you can do to simplify it, take that route. That would be my first thing. The second thing would be try to build as much automation in your process as you can. So any data source that you're looking for in terms of coming into your comp process, make sure that's automated. Make sure you can audit that and make sure that there is a clean data source for use to use for sales compensation. The worst thing you can do is have data sources where the numbers don't make a whole lot of sense. And then your team is spending a ton of time reconciling why the numbers are. So making sure you have one source of truth for all the data that goes from the company, you know, how you're recognizing revenue from the company, all the way down to compensation. And it doesn't really have to be the same in terms of, oh, this is how we recognize revenue, but this, and this is how we should pay for compensation. It doesn't have to be the same. The flow should be the same. For example, you might recognize revenue in a certain way, but you might pay on bookings, but that bookings translates into a revenue. And that translation should be very logical. And you can be able to say, well, I can take this transaction and write it back to revenue because I know what the flow looks like. So those are some of the things that you definitely need to think about. The other big thing that I've learned in the SaaS world is around deep bookings and cancellations and replacements and those type of things. That, again, is becoming a lot more complicated as well. And I don't think there's a silver lining here, but what I would just say is it just be thoughtful of, on the rep's perspective, of what they're trying to do and why they're doing it, what some of the motivations you have, and set your processes to make sure that, number one, you're protecting the company. Number two, you're focusing on what's best for the customer, how your sales reps are engaging for the customer. The third thing is like making sure you get the right motivation for the sales rep. So, you know, if you focus on those three things, some of those strategies that you might think about around, well, how do I manage when a customer decides to downsell or cancel? Or if I want my sales rep to cross-sell, or a customer might be, you know, they're thinking about, you know, removing one product and adding another product. You just have to think through, like, how do I try to create the right motivations where it's not going to have a significant impact on the company, but from a sales rep perspective, they've got the right motivations to do the right thing for the customer.
All three are very common. I would say misses, but ultimately, if there's an oversight, you can have some pretty big ramifications. I think maybe just touching on each one of those. So simplicity, I'm 100% aligned. I mean, clearly, simplicity is beautiful. It's elegant. There's a lot of ways to think about how humans operate and appreciate simplicity. If you step back and think about what it actually means, as long as it's simple to understand by the seller. And I'm curious to get your perspective on this, because simplicity for the sake of simplicity sometimes can lead to bad outcomes, because you could simplify a plan to where the mechanics are not actually aligned to a good outcome for the customer. I mean, for the third thing you mentioned is a perfect example of that, of like debookings might be the best thing for the customer and best thing for the business. But if our incentive plan is so simple that it doesn't capture that mechanic, then we miss out on it. The optimal situation, you have a simple plan that captures all the business requirements. But when you can't get to that beautiful simplicity of a plan and you have to have some set elements of complexity, I guess, how do you address that? How do you solve for that? It, you know, there's ideals, but then you're always presented with these odd cases where you have to have a little bit of complexity that the reps need to understand.
In those situations, enablement, training, doing knowledge sessions on a regular basis, just making sure that you're able to answer some of those questions. Because like we put in strategies where we don't know what the outcome is going to be. They're like, this is the first time we've done it. And when you put something out and, you know, as comp professionals, you're like, oh yeah, this sounds pretty simple. Like, you know, go from here to here and then from here. And it's like, it's almost like a decision tree. Sales reps don't understand that, right? They just want something like, I've done this, what's the outcome? And that's where you kind of have that complexity. You got to try to bridge that gap, right? It's like, okay, yeah, this is a little bit complex, but let me walk you through a few examples. Let me walk you through a few scenarios that we've already seen, and this is what the outcome will look like. And, you know, yeah, we've got some complicated, even though we're trying to simplify as much as we can, we do have some complicated scenarios. And spending the time with the sales organization, with the sales managers, and having to address the why are we doing this? Then they start to think in a different way. Right? It's like, oh, okay, I get it. Now I understand why, but still help me understand by giving me examples of what this could look like. And I've spent a lot of time with sales reps around, hey, I've got this really complex situation. What's the outcome based on this new policy you guys put in place? And I'll kind of go through the math with them. And sometimes I'll even learn something new. It's like, oh, wait a minute, I never thought of that. That's a unique situation, right? I might have to change the policy because that's the behavior I don't want to have. So, you know, the initial thing is always make sure you kind of have the enablement. You listen to the sales organization, right? You listen to the sales rep. You have some use cases that you can kind of work through with them, and then you tweak it. It shouldn't be a one and done. It should always be evolving to what the business needs are, to what the customers are saying, what the sales reps are saying. And some of it, yes, you have to take with a grain of salt. Well, a lot of it is very valid. And when you start going through the examples and thinking of from a customer standpoint, it's like, yeah, really, that makes sense. And that really wasn't the intended outcome. So let's tweak that a little bit. And getting that feedback is so important. that in terms of understanding the simplicity, because those guys are in the field all the time. We're in the background. We kind of do that, the analytics and everything else. But listening and then reacting is probably the best thing you can do in terms of kind of build that simplification up.
It's actually a very interesting point because people don't want to talk about compensation. Compensation is a tough topic to talk about. You don't talk about, you know, your boss, about salary, and people don't want to bring up money because money is kind of a weird topic. But in reality, it's actually very important to one, enablement, right? If you have a plan that's slightly more complex, like you need to make sure the sales team understands it because it's not about telling them at the beginning of the year and going forward. And then two, that feedback loop, as you mentioned, like there are going to be situations where we realize, hey, this is actually not driving the behavior we want. Or conversely, it's driving the behavior we want from a financials, but maybe it's not driving the behavior that we want or a customer experience that we want for the customer. And to have that feedback loop and have that kind of open line of communication to the sales team is absolutely critical. I mean, I think the best in the best sales comp organizations that we've seen in Toby work with, sales comp leaders is very close to the sales process, right? Exactly as you mentioned, like you're understanding and hearing from the sales team what they're doing with the actual customer and the situations that are coming up, because that's the only way to truly align the incentives with the behaviors that you want. The third point you mentioned earlier on kind of from a best practice perspective, the element of being able to take things like the concept of like debookings and understanding the impact, just again, unpacking that. How are you understanding the sales process as a part of the design phase? Is there any specific, you know, method or approach that you've taken that's helped you get closer to it in the design process?
Yeah, we try to look at, and the biggest thing is like how our systems are behaving, because you know, we have different tools for revenue recognition, booking our transactions, recognizing the deal. We have sort of a, we'll call it a booking tool, which is not really a booking tool, something we've created within one of our tools, and just really understanding how things behave through that process, right? So for example, if we shut down a customer, what happens over here? Why did we shut him down? Is it automatically going to create a booking? In some cases, it does. In other cases, it doesn't. And so really understanding how your internal processes work, and then to be able to say, oh, okay, I know what we have. There's certain things that create this type of trigger. Do we need to put a rule around that? Or is this something like, hey, wait a minute, we're impacting the salespeople, but they have no control over it. So maybe we need to change that and not impact them on that. So really understanding, like as we're going through that, like we spend a lot of time understanding our business process, like our from a booking, our OTC, right? Order to cash. From our order to cash process, like how does it go from this transaction, if it's positive, if it's a negative, if it's a cancellation, or it's a shutdown or whatever it may be, really understanding that and then putting in the necessary rules to say, okay, yes, this gets impacted by sales. No, this doesn't get impacted by sales. So understanding that loop really is important for anybody in this role.
Yeah, exactly. And you're right. Because understanding the sales process alone does not necessarily translate to the data that we track. And I think based off, you know, your second point, very valid. Like you need to understand how X over here as a business objective translates into what the rep actually sees from a data perspective and what we're measuring and the metrics and tying it all together. I mean, again, this goes back to the complexity of sales comp because you're optimizing for all of these different mechanics in the plan structure, but then the data and bringing it all together.
Comp isn't easy, right? Like it's getting more and more complicated. And when you start thinking about it and saying, well, it's not just what goes into your compensation tool in terms of the data. You actually need to understand how the data got there in that format. And what are the rules that you put in place and where are those rules being implemented? Because at some point, again, being in a public company, I've been in a public company for, you know, almost 20 some odd years, everything comes to an audit. Compensation is one of those high expense items. How do you know you're paying rate for that deal? How do you know you're paying rate for that deal? Like, where's the transaction coming from? And how you can map it back? And if you don't understand the data elements, your source data and how the source data gets updated, it makes that process much more difficult. So compensation, like you need to understand the whole end to end. And that's really where you kind of get the most value around, okay, am I setting the right strategies in place based on the systems that we have and based on motivation that we're trying to put on in the field?
Yeah, couldn't agree more. From the complexity of data to understand the sales process, I mean, there's a lot that has to be done. And I think as change increases and the pace that businesses are evolving their go-to-market function, I think it's only going to get more and more complicated, as you mentioned. I mean, this kind of goes back to like the concept of dynamic comp, right? Right now, we think about comp plans as like once a year, you get a comp plan and it has to be simple because it's very difficult. You know, it's encompassing so many nuanced things. So you try to simplify it, but you roll up this comp plan for a whole year and hope that at the end of the year, it drives the right behaviors. When in reality, the more and more data that we collect, you know, you could argue that a comp plan should actually be done at a customer level and not at a rep level, and a rep gets compensated based off of different objectives that are achieved within customers that they are assigned to. And we completely disconnect the annual model from the customers don't buy within our fiscal years purely, right? They sales processes cross fiscal years all the time. So why do we think about it as two separate things? And so the proliferation of the data, the AI capabilities that are coming out on a day-to-day basis, and being able to dynamically tailor and incentivize is going to, I think, radically shift the entire sales process and in a better way, I think, for the reps, but also more importantly for our customers. Why waste the customer's time talking about things that are not relevant when we've seen customers like this encounter these problems, and here's a prompt that tells you to bring up this specific product that had you not brought up, it may have actually not solved the problem for that specific customer. I mean, I think to me, these conversations are always very interesting because at the end of the day, sales comp is so critical to driving the right behaviors from the selling organization. And you're kind of always on that forefront of change with the sales organization. As sales process shifts, as the sales motion shifts, we have to evolve with it in sales comp. So as we come to the end of the show here, I always ask the guests to kind of share with the audience of sales comp professionals that are listening in, lessons learned or resources that you've used, whether it's, you know, books, you know, media, individuals that you follow for guidance or kind of recommendations that have been helpful for you in the past or things that you'd recommend for other sales comp professionals.
There's a great number of people out there, you know, companies that have done compensation for many, many, many years that sometimes, you know, I'll ping them and they're looking for an engagement, but you can kind of have a simple conversation with people and around, hey, I've got this particular situation. What do you think? I've also reached out to people that I don't even know. Right. And, you know, I have them on LinkedIn. I'm just like, oh, you know, this person works at X company and I wonder how they're doing compensation. I'll reach out to them and say, hey, this is a role I'm in. This is what I do. I mean, I want to pick your brain around this type of topic. And people are more than happy to have those conversations. So looking at your network, you know, expanding your network within LinkedIn, having a connection with some people that have similar roles or even somebody that might be, you know, just starting out and you want to mentor somebody, right? That could be another way to kind of learn stuff as well, being a mentor for somebody. And then obviously there's tons of resources out there. Like I try to go on, and you know, you guys do this a lot, you know, at any sort of round tables or discussion points where, you know, that you can just jump on, like as many round tables as you can get in, you should try to do that. There's tons of resources out there. Just a matter of sometimes it's about being brave and taking a leap of faith with some people, right? Like I mentioned, like, you know, reaching out to nobody like on LinkedIn, you never met them. And it's like the worst they can say is no.
100%. I mean, it is actually a small community in the grand scheme of things. And rather than doing things in this siloed fashion, I mean, you can learn so much from people that have already kind of gone through this change and pivot and hearing from them firsthand, especially for organizations that are lagging in the shift to consumption-based pricing, or that's perfect. Go talk to someone who's already done that and kind of get here firsthand. And I agree, because this industry and this space, it really does feel like an apprenticeship model that you learn, right? You learn from experience of others that you work with. And so, you know, you can certainly accelerate that by connecting with other peers.
One other thing I would recommend is like go outside of your industry. Go into like one thing I looked at is in the finance industry. Like how do they set their compensation plans, right? And everybody knows a banker, right? Go into your bank and have a conversation with them, right? And that's sometimes what I've done as well. Like, tell me about how you guys pay people, right? Even in, let's say, the chemical industry or anything outside of your industry, just to get a more rounded perspective of different things, right? Mm-hmm. And that way you can kind of evaluate, well, can that work in my industry? Can it not work in my industry? I think just having more rounded experience.
Well, thank you so much, Del. I think this show has been amazing. I think just hearing kind of your journey and then diving into the complexities of sales comp design. Just one final question here for those that are listening today that want to reach out and get a hold of you, maybe ask questions, get your input on their process, or just broadly connect. What's the best way to get a hold of you?
I'm very active on LinkedIn. Active means like, you know, I'll look at my messages and everything else. So that's probably the best way to get a hold of me.
But thank you for being on today. It was an absolute pleasure.
Thanks for having me, Nabil. And, you know, I'm happy to do this again. I had a lot of fun. I really enjoyed the discussion and conversation. And hopefully we can connect again on a show like this.
Absolutely. Okay. Well, thank you, Del.
Thank you.
The Sales Compensation Show is brought to you by Forma AI, the first sales compensation platform designed around the agile methodology of CompOps. To learn more about how Forma AI can help design, execute, and optimize your sales comp strategy, visit forma.ai. Find us by searching for Sales Compensation on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, or anywhere else podcasts are found. And make sure to click subscribe so you don't miss our next episode. On behalf of the team here at Forma AI, thanks for listening.